And welcome back, everyone. It is day two of our April 2023 South Dakota Game Fish and Park Commission meeting. I'm Stephanie Rissler. We're coming to you live from the McCory Gardens in Brookings. We've got a nice agenda with us for us this morning. We're going to jump down to number 17 and hear from Bob Holzman with DJ Case. We'll have an R3 angling survey results presentation. And I believe Bob was online, ready to go.
Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you.
Excellent. Pleasure to be with you here on a Friday morning. And I'll go ahead and share my screen, if that's all right. And we'll get going. Can everybody see the slideshow okay?
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. So a couple of introductory remarks before I jump into the data here today is, first of all, I want to thank my partner in crime, Shayla Larson, the R3 and relevancy coordinator for your state, who collaborated with me on this project and really did, an outstanding job of shepherding the process in a very timely and efficient manner. I also want to give thanks to Director Roebling for his leadership and support, not only in your state, but on a national level when it comes to hunting and shooting sports participation and fishing participation and efforts surrounding R3, the recruitment, retention, and reactivation of people in hunting and fishing. So it's been a pleasure to work with your staff over the last couple months. Our company, DJ Case, works with a lot of state agencies and federal agencies and conservation organizations on communication and survey and meeting facilitation issues. And we do a lot of projects in the R3 area. I'm freezing up here. There we go. So this issue of angling laps, which attracted a lot of attention in your state and elsewhere, is part of a bigger conversation going on nationally, as a lot of states observed increases in people hunting and fishing and buying licenses during the first year of the COVID pandemic in 2020. And so it attracted all kinds of attention from industry to academic journals, to blogs, even Forbes magazine, and everybody wanted to know what sparked the increase and then what caused the drop that we saw in license sales the following year. So to answer those questions, and before we get to the survey results, I think it's important to put the problem in context. And so what I did was I took a look at fishing license data in South Dakota over a 10-year period, culminating in 2021, which would have been the year after the COVID pandemic, when license sales dropped back down. And I looked at both resident and non-resident numbers from that 10-year period. And it's interesting to observe that from a resident perspective, your license sales peaked back in 2012 when you sold just north of 120,000 resident fishing licenses. But if you combine non-resident and resident fishing licenses, South Dakota reached its peak over the last 10 years in 2016. So the combined total of those two lines were the most licenses that you sold. I also want to point out on the graph here, before the pandemic started, 2019 was a particularly down year for both resident and non-resident licenses. And in talking to some of your staff, one of the things that occurred that year was a lot of flooding that may have impacted boat access and even shore access and may have depressed license sales. But I think it's important to note, because it's no wonder that the 2020 year seemed like such a shining star, because it was really coming off of a rather poor year. And then again, it dropped back down in 2021. But again, to put all of this in context, let's just look at the residents. Okay. And again, there's the blue line from 2011 to 2021. And what's interesting is in 2021, you actually wind up 1% ahead of where you started in license sales the decade before. Okay. So again, I want to put this sort of COVID retraction in context. licenses churn. They churn every year. You get new people coming in, you get people going out. But relatively speaking, the resident license sales, when looked at over a longer period, are relatively stable. Okay, so again, I think it's important to have that context when we think about what's going on and sort of the concern or the alarm bells that are raised about it. Now, I don't say any of that to diminish the issue, because I think it's very important to look at the license trends and to understand the audiences and to try to get a pulse on, you know, what's driving, you know, either increases or decreases in license sales. So when we take a look at the 2021 license holders and compare them with people who bought a fishing license in 2020, we can see where the restrictions took place. So all residents were down 6% after that initial year of COVID, but women were down 12% in the license sales. Men were actually up 2%. And then if we look at the age groups, it's also very telling. Okay, so basically where you lost a lot of participants is in the younger adult age categories, especially 18 to 24, down 10%, 25 to 34 year olds down 7%. And again, the older you get, then there's actually sort of an increase that occurred between 2020 and 2021 among older customers in the fishing license pool. So again, what this tells us is, again, the COVID bump was driven largely by younger adults, especially females, who are not typical participants, who, due to the fact that they likely had limited options in terms of recreation indoors and outdoors during the lockdown, and needed to find an outlet for socially distanced activities, many of them tried fishing for a year. And then in 2021, when the world began to open back up, many of them kind of returned to their previous leisure activities. Okay, so let's get to the survey, which is the main focus of our work together. The South Dakota Lapsed Angler Survey was done to better understand the audience. And again, not only the demographics, but what are some of the social psychological indicators, and are there clues that will help the R3 program or marketing efforts or fisheries management or parks or lands or anyone else to help make it easier for people to go fishing? And so the questions were very much designed in a way that would inform management interventions. Okay, as I like to call it, actionable research. We did the study in January and early February. I sampled lapsed anglers from the 2020 year, and then we went back to 2019 and 2018 as a way to sort of compare and see whether there was something unique, again, about those COVID folks. And of course, this was done online with an email invitation. All right, so some of the results. And again, I always like to kind of start my questionnaires and also results with sort of some basic things to get a pulse, again, on the audience and who they are. So we asked a basic question about rate your level of interest in fishing. And among the folks who have lapsed over the last several years, you see that the majority of them say their interest is intermediate. But also note that there are more folks who say their interest in fishing is low than there are folks who say their interest is high. Okay, so let's take that 29%. Let's just round it up. You're basically saying 3 in 10 people from your lapsed anglers are folks who are not particularly interested anyway. They may do this activity once in a while because they're taking the grandkids fishing, or they got talked into buying a fishing license for somebody's bachelor party or something. And again, it's illustrative of the fact that not everybody who buys a fishing license is really into the sport. And I know I'm kind of stating the obvious here, but again, that tells us that within this pool of people, some people are going to be harder to get back than others. And so your return on investment is really best served focusing on the folks who at least have that intermediate level of interest. We asked folks what they're interested in catching when they do go fishing, and this one blew me away. Okay. And by the way, I'm a walleye guy. Okay. I live in Wisconsin. I love fishing walleyes. I did a similar study in Wisconsin last year, And walleyes and bluegills in Wisconsin came out almost in a tie. Okay, so the margin of victory here was very, very much surprising to me. That, you know, walleyes, by and far the most preferred fish for the lapsed anglers to catch in your state. And then all the way down to muskies at only 3%. Check that one as one of their preferred species. But again, some of this relates to the availability of the various fish species across the state. And if we look at that regionally, there are some interesting significant differences as well. So I divided the state up, as you can see here, into west, central, and east regions. And on the left-hand side or the west, a majority of the residents in that part of the state that live in those counties indicated that they liked trout fishing. And at a statistically higher level than the rest of the state, northern pike, largemouth, and smallmouth bass were both selected. In the central and eastern regions, it's about walleye and perch. And especially the farther east you go in the state, the more likely residents are to indicate that perch is a preferred species. So again, type of information that can be used to market at, you know, and segment audiences based on where they live. All right. The other thing, again, a very basic question I like to ask is, when you do go fishing, do you go fishing for anything that bites, or do you tend to target a particular species? It breaks down about 55% to 45%. In other words, 45% say they just go fishing for anything that bites. And when you think about that for a minute, half of your lapsed anglers are not really, they don't really care. They're just out there for the experience. Whatever they catch, they catch. That changes a little bit the more you look at age. And the older an angler gets, the more likely that those folks are targeting particular species. Again, whether it's walleyes or trout or what have you. We ask about fishing motivations. And again, this is a question that's probably been asked in dozens of studies around the country, not just in South Dakota, but the results often look very similar. Okay, so what are the top three motivations people like to go fishing for? Spending time with friends and family, enjoying nature, and getting away and relaxing were the top three things revealed in our survey. Now, the one thing that kind of troubles me about this, and maybe it's a real challenge when it comes to encouraging people into activities like fishing, is when you look at these three motivations, they are not particularly activity specific. In other words, you can meet these same three motivations through a whole slew of other types of outdoor recreation. Some of them natural resource related, some of them not. For instance, you know, camping obviously is the first one that comes to mind, but you know, you can say the same three things about golf and spending time on a golf course. So the challenge becomes, how do you distinguish and market the benefits of fishing when the top three motivations can be fulfilled in other activities as well? And I'll get back to that a little bit more when we talk about recommendations. Here is a catch or an activity specific motivation: catching fish for eating. Now, if I was taking your survey, this is one I would have rated as very important. Okay. I love bringing home fish and frying them. But on our survey, we see a really interesting break again along age groups. So if you look at the 65 and older lapsed anglers and you add up the very important and the moderately important, you see a very strong majority of those folks are interested in harvesting fish. Almost the opposite is true in the 18 to 34 year old category, where a majority of those folks say it's not important at all or only slightly important. So it'll be interesting to monitor this as time goes by. Is this a generation effect or is this an age effect? Okay, so, and I don't really know, to tell you the truth, you know, looking at it now, but again, will these 18 to 34 year olds, as they age in the next couple decades, will their harvest motivation increase, or will their sort of non-consumptive catch and release ethic carry forward? Because that will have significant implications for fish management in South Dakota. So that's one that's worth watching in the future. We ask a question about barriers. And we provide a whole laundry list of things people can check, and they can check all that apply. The most frequently checked option is lack of free time. Prefer other leisure activities comes in at number two, and then it drops off to a whole bunch of things that are not typically very significant. And again, sometimes those are interesting findings too. So for example, in our line of work, and I'm sure you know you hear it a lot from stakeholders and in meetings, just as I have in the work I've done, is our regulations are too complicated. Regulations are driving people out of the sport. Well, the data rarely support that hypothesis. And in this case, they don't either. Only 10% said regulations. How about the cost of a fishing license? About 1 in 5 say that's a barrier. That does tend to be selected a little bit more by senior citizens. All right, barriers by levels of interest. This goes back to, again, the first question I showed you in the results. And, you know, basically that lack of free time, only 33% of lapsed anglers who have a high interest say that's a problem. It's the low and the intermediate. Prefer other leisure activities more. Again, 55% of the low select that, intermediate and high select it much less frequently. Why am I showing you this? Again, there is this sort of inherent conversation that goes on about the lack of free time. And this shows up in hunting surveys as well. I don't know about you all, but the last time I checked, time hasn't changed. There's still 7 days a week, 24 hours in a day, 365 days a year, just like when you were little kids. So what's, you know, why is time such a problem now? I would argue it's not. If people are interested in the activity, if you can market to them, if you can outcompete the other leisure choices by making it more convenient, more accessible, they're going to find the time to do it. And if you can increase people's interest in the activity, they'll also find the time to do it. So that's the bottom line. That's my sermon on that one for today. We asked a bunch of questions about, you know, can we do something to manage either the amenities at locations or the access points at locations to get you to come and fish more. And one of the cool things we did in the surveys, we showed them a variety of pictures that depicted different kinds of access spots that exist in South Dakota. And first we asked them among A, B, C, and D, which ones are acceptable to you? In other words, you know, you'd be interested in fishing there. And this adds up to more than 100 because they could check more than one. Then we followed up with the next question, which was of A, B, C, and D, which one do you prefer the most? And you can see that C winds up getting a majority of people finding it acceptable, and it was the most frequently selected option. We had an interesting discussion among fisheries management folks when I provided the preliminary results of the survey about why that might be. Different ideas include, you know, again, if people are interested in walleyes, this looks like a great place to catch walleyes. Okay. It also is more natural than the other spots, except for probably B. And people told us they want to spend time out in nature. So those are a couple of leading reasons there. We asked about amenities. In other words, if we provided these kind of things at a shore or fishing access spot, would it make it more likely for you to fish there? And of the list here, bathrooms came out number one. Shaded areas, number two. Fish cleaning stations and signs posting bag limits, all selected by a majority of people saying these are things that would make a difference to them. All right. And again, the fish cleaning station was chosen especially, again, by older lapsed anglers. Again, those are the ones more interested in catching fish to eat. Some of the other things, not so much. And so when you talk about like marketing to families and little kids, we were a little bit surprised that some of this stuff like picnic tables and playgrounds did not garner more support. But again, that's why we do the surveys, and you can use this kind of information then to prioritize how you're spending your capital dollars when it comes to improvements at different locations. All right. I want to get to some of the selected recommendations that are in the report. I'm not going to go over all of them. I'll just highlight a few things that we're recommending based on the results. The first thing is, with any R3 program on the fishing or hunting side, it's important to set goals and to evaluate the strategies that you're using to reach those goals. And again, that has to take place within the context of understanding that churn is a natural function that happens in license pools. And we know a great deal about which demographics tend to churn more than others. And so those can provide targets for you to set goals for and marketing strategies that you can reach out to those audiences about. All right. Remember the motivations conversation? I think the messaging should be about family, friendship, and fishing, and how fishing in particular can be the vehicle to advance those things. So rather than talking about, the great opportunities to harvest bluegills or catch rates about different fish, the messaging to encourage people to get out there should be stories and narratives about the time little Jimmy dropped the pole in the lake and everybody laughed, or the time that you had a family reunion and Uncle George caught his first bullhead in 50 years. Those are the kind of things that are going to resonate with the lapsed anglers, because that's the kind of experience that they're looking for. Our report talks about email marketing, and a number of states have recently demonstrated success with sending out simple pre-programmed reminder messages to people who have not yet bought a license in a given year. And that's been shown as a very cost-effective way to reduce churn and reactivate fishing licenses. We talk in our report about promoting one-day licenses, which can be a little bit counterintuitive because, again, you get less revenue on the one-day licenses. But the fact of the matter is, again, if people are citing time as a constraint, and you're also dealing with segments of the audience that are not as invested from an equipment, a time, an identity perspective, just getting them out there one day, keeping them active from year to year, is better than nothing. And the more you can keep them active at some level, the more chance you're going to have to increase their interest over time and convert them to an annual license buyer. We also talk about cross-promoting fishing licenses with other activities. We had a great conversation with your staff about how to do this in terms of camping reservations. And, you've got people who are already going to be spending time outside. They're going to be spending time in state parks that have fishing opportunities nearby. And there may be a lot of opportunities to encourage them to tag on a fishing license to an outdoor experience that they're already having. So we have much more in terms of results and recommendations in our report, which is out and available. You can ask Shayla for it if you're interested in diving down into more details. But I didn't want to overstay my welcome here with you this morning. So I'd be happy to take some questions if you have them and want to talk about some other things.
Very good. Any questions from the commission? I do have a question for you, Bob, and I apologize if you've already gave this information. I'm just curious, when you started the survey, how did you decide who to send the survey to? Were these just South Dakota residents, previous license holders, current license holders? How was that decided?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I kind of brushed over that. So they were lapsed anglers. So they were folks who had not purchased a fishing license of any kind. They were residents. We limited the study just to residents. Had not purchased a fishing license since 2020. So we did the study early this year. Essentially, that means they've been gone for 2 years, 2021 and 2022. The reason why I recommended we do a 2 year look instead of just a simple 1 year look is, again, from 1 year to the next, we know from research that almost 50% of a license pool can shift in and out because you're planning your daughter's wedding, so you don't have time to go in a year, or somebody has shoulder surgery. There's lots of things in life that come up on a one-year basis that can prevent participation. But if somebody hasn't participated for 2 years, then something else is going on. So we set that as a break. Then we also did a poll of licenses from 2019 and 2018. So these are people now that have lapsed 3 or 4 years. And that enabled us to compare that 2020 cohort to see if there was anything unique or different about them. And we found there was. You know, they're more likely to be one-day license buyers. They were more likely to be female. They were more likely to be younger.
Two follow-up questions on that. So do you know how many surveys were sent out overall, what that number looked like, and then how many actually responded back?
Right. So I don't have the number right in front of me. We had something like 550 responses. We actually sent out about 10,000, not quite 10,000 emails, and so the response rate on the survey, in all honesty, was rather poor. It was only 7%, and there were a couple things that went into that. One of which is we had a lot of emails bounce back again, you know, because we were going back 3 or 4 years. We had, you know, people who had passed away, people who had moved, you know, people had changed their email. The other thing, frankly, is if somebody has a low interest in an activity, whether it's fishing or anything else, and they haven't done that activity in a couple of years, they're not real motivated to take a survey about it. So, you know, that was a challenge for us. Now, let me say something about the response rate. It's poor, even by industry standards that are getting more increasingly challenged in getting people to respond to surveys. So the question becomes, you know, is there a non-response bias there? We did a couple things to investigate that, one of which is comparing the demographics of our survey respondents to the licensed population that we pulled from. And what we found was it matched pretty well, except for among older anglers, there was we probably over-surveyed older anglers. Okay, so you know that's one caveat to put on the results. But the other thing that gives me confidence that despite the low response rate that this data is representative is, again, some of those questions that we've asked in other places, results came back looking similar. So, you know, that gives me confidence that, you know, overall, you know, I think we can have a fair degree of confidence in these results. These are great questions. Do you have some more?
I think you did a good job answering all my other questions. Anything from the commission? It looks like your job has been a well done one. So thank you, sir.
Oh, I appreciate it. And again, thanks for having me here this morning. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to both you and Shayla.